business of distribution. To leverage the fast lane wealth equation and get near the law of affection, I have to strap on my commitment helmet and get this product out in front of millions. Potent fast lane number 3, intentional iteration, II. The final fast lane interstate is intentional iteration, or II. Iteration is the means or act of repeating a process, usually with the aim of approaching a desired goal or target or result. Intentional iteration is a potent fast lane, but it offers the greatest challenge because it really doesn't satisfy all 5 commandments, but 4. The process of intentional iteration is the act of satisfying the final commandment, scale. Scale is achieved either through human resource systems or repeated successes. For example, when a real estate investor buys a single-family home at a bank auction and later rents it out, there is no scale. And with that one act, nothing can create scale. The investor has little wiggle room in his fast lane wealth equation. Net income is derived from rent, and asset value is derived by the home's market value. To solve that challenge, the investor engages in II and repeats the process. Instead of buying one home, he buys 50. Yeah, easier said than done, and it can be incredibly slow. In effect, the investor has chosen to play on a field of singles, and to hit the home run, II needs to become the strategy. Iteration is a profitable singles-based business scaled to home runs. Franchising is another example of II. If you build a small store with the goal of intentional iteration, your goal isn't one store, but hundreds, perhaps thousands, through the act of chaining or franchising. The intentional iterator goes into business to cookie-cut his system across many successes. A small store often starts out as a violation of 4 commandments, but quickly can transfigure into a full-fledged fast lane venture with iteration. The fast lane franchising premise is to build a local business defined by systematic processes, then franchise the concept nationally or worldwide. The iterator's goal is to replicate and sell a concept, a brand, and a system and remove himself from operations. While your little deli might not be fast lane, it could be turned fast lane by the process of II through franchise or chaining replication. A popular thread at my forum is titled, "Is a Candy Kiosk Fast Lane?" A forum user wanted to know if having automated candy kiosks in the mall constitutes a fast lane plan. As a standalone, no. But with II, fast lane, baby. One kiosk in one mall isn't going to make you rich because it's a singles-based business. However, 200 kiosks and 50 malls might, because it creates net income, scales asset value, and makes a bigger impact of magnitude. Intentional iteration is the fast laner's response to a limited scale. Chapter Summary, Fast Lane Distinctions. The best fast lanes satisfy all 5 commandments: control, entry, need, time, and scale. Assuming a need-based premise, the internet is the fastest interstate because it overwhelmingly satisfies all commandments. Innovation can be any variety of open roads: authoring, inventing, or services. Inventing success needs coupling with distribution. A singles-based business is scaled to a home run business by intentional iteration. With iteration, scale is conquered. Chapter 36, Find Your Open Road. At first, people refuse to believe that a strange new thing can be done. Then they begin to hope it can be done. Then they see it can be done. Then it is done, and all the world wonders why it was not done centuries ago. Francis Hogsden Burnett. Needs, ideas, opportunity, and the open road. Opportunities and the open roads they represent are everywhere. Look around. That person complaining at the store counter. Opportunity. That stupid voicemail maze you hate navigating when you call the bank. Opportunity. That unsold house that languishes on the market. Opportunity. That trash on the side of the road. Opportunity. That rotting salad that lasted only 2 days in the refrigerator. Opportunity. Those people bitching on that online forum. Opportunity. If you can't see the opportunities that surround you every day, you haven't turned your fast lane frequency to them. When you make minor mental adjustments, roads seemingly closed are suddenly opened. Many entrepreneurs misinterpret opportunity because they associate opportunity with breakthrough, legendary ideas. They seek virgin ideas, perfect and new, ones that will be unveiled to the world in grandiose events. Rarely does that happen. Opportunity is rarely about some blockbuster breakthrough like the light bulb or the car, but it's simple as an unmet need or a need not being met adequately. Opportunity is a solution to an inconvenience. Opportunity is simplification. Opportunity is a feeling. Opportunity is comfort. Opportunity is better service. Opportunity is fixing pain. Opportunity is putting weak companies out of business. Someone is doing it. You've got a great idea, but someone is already doing it? So what? Do it better. Someone is doing it is a monumental illusion, imposing as an impassable obstacle. Someone is always already doing it. The bigger question is, can you do it better? Can you fill the need better, offer greater value, or be a better marketer? When I was struck with my idea to start a limousine directory on the internet, I thought it was a legendary idea. That is, until I went on the web and searched. There were already a dozen companies doing what I thought was a pristine, unmolested idea. At the time, my frequency wasn't fully attuned. I was going to drop the idea and start a new brainstorm session in search of that infamous blockbuster idea, one that no one else among 6 billion people on planet Earth have ever thought of. But a friend interrupted my perception and kicked my antenna into proper tune. She said, "Competition is everywhere. Just do it and do it better." She was right. Competition is just a staple of business. The opportunity was an open road, not a closed one. These existing web directories weren't easily found, and for the most part, they weren't user-friendly. I recognized a poorly met need, and I decided to drive this road of opportunity, despite the numerous barricades that warned road closed. A decade later, every one of those companies I feared disappeared or became insignificant. In fact, the industry leader, unable to respond to my domination, diverted into an alternative service. Forget the big idea, go for better. Successful businesses rarely evolve from some legendary idea. Nope, successful entrepreneurs take existing concepts and make them better. They take poorly met needs and solve them better. Skip the big idea and go for the big execution. You don't need an idea that's never been done before. Old ideas suffice. Just take it and do it better. Execute like no one has. Years ago, what if Sergey Brin and Larry Page looked at the internet landscape and said, "Gee, there are plenty of search engines out there. Yahoo, Snap, AltaVista. Why start Google? It's being done." Thankfully, they didn't, and now Google is the most used search engine, and because of it, Brin and Page are now billionaires. A brand spanking new idea? Nope, a need solved better with big execution. Department stores have been around for decades, but that didn't stop Sam Walton from creating Walmart. It was an open road when the road seemed closed. Hamburgers were around for decades, but that didn't stop Ray Kroc from starting McDonald's. It was an open road when the road seemed closed. Coffee had been around for 1,000 years when Howard Schultz created Starbucks. A new idea? Nope. Starbucks made coffee fashionable and invented a brand, an ambiance, and an emotion, and attached it to coffee. It was an open road when the road seemed closed. DVD rental stores were around for a long time, but that didn't stop Netflix or Redbox from starting a company and adding convenience to the need equation. It was an open road when the road seemed closed. Beer had been brewed for thousands of years, but that didn't stop Jim Koch from starting Sam Adams, or Sam Calagione from starting Dogfish Head Craft Brewery, now the fastest growing brewery in America. Dogfish was started back in 1995 with a 10-gallon home brew kit and little money. There was an open road when the road seemed closed. Garbage had been around since men have walked the planet, yet that didn't stop Brian Scudamore from starting and then franchising 1-800-GOT-JUNK, nor did it stop Wayne Huizenga from founding Waste Management with just one truck and a handful of customers. He later built Waste Management into a Fortune 500 company. Is garbage a new need, or a need that needed better fulfillment? It was an open road when the road seemed closed. A blanket with arms? It's been around for years, but that didn't stop Snuggie from selling 40 million blankets via infomercial marketing. An old idea better marketed and better executed? It was an open road when the road seemed closed. MySpace was thriving well before Facebook, but that didn't stop Mark Zuckerberg. He saw a niche need and solved it. It was an open road when the road seemed closed. Poorly met needs are open roads when they often appear closed. Successful businesses take existing ideas, services, and products and simply make them better or spin them in new directions. How to spot open roads. Not a day goes by when I don't spot a need that can be exploited for fast lane opportunity. My mind is tuned because I see the terrain of opportunity through accustomed senses. I see and hear what most people don't. How can you tune your eyes and ears to the same frequency? With a little practice, it's easy. Open roads, needs, and the opportunity come prefaced with code words or phrases that scream, "This is an opportunity." When you catch yourself or someone else in these words, you've just uncovered a possible opportunity. Here are the most common phrases.
I hate.
What do you hate? Solve the hate and there's your open road.
I don't like.
What don't you like? Remove the dislike and there's your open road.
This frustrates me.
What is frustrating? Remove the frustration and there's your open road.
Why is this like this?
I don't know. Why is it? Remove the why and there's your open road.
Do I have to?
I don't know. Do you? Remove the have to and there's your open road.
I wish there was.
What do you wish? If you wish, others wish too. Make wishes come true and there's your open road.
I'm tired of.
What are you tired of? Fix someone's tiresomeness and there's your open road.
This sucks.
What sucks? Remove or reduce suckage and there's your open road. Opportunity is dressed in predictable code words that illuminate its presence. For example, I'm a sloppy eater. A white shirt plus spaghetti and forget it. Aside from the slop, I have a nasty knack of biting my lip on the inside of my mouth. When I bite myself, a canker sore forms every time. I've had canker sore issues since grade school. They're not problematic unless I accidentally bite my lip or my mouth. The last canker sore I had lasted a week and was excruciatingly painful. I'm tired of these canker sores, I bellyache. Notice the language. I'm tired. Ring, ring, ring. Opportunity. My discomfort led me to the internet for canker sore research. I found some conflicting conjecture and information on how to prevent them. Some people recommended vitamin X while others recommended herb Y. Now vitamin X and herb Y is not the real name because I'm protecting my formula. So I bought vitamin X and herb Y and waited until my next chewing mistake. Then it happened. While eating some oatmeal, I bit my lip. A few days later, I felt a canker sore brewing at the bite location. I loaded up on vitamin X and herb Y. Remarkably, the canker sore never formed, and it appeared that vitamin X and herb Y worked as a canker sore preventative. Now, anytime I feel a canker sore brewing from an earlier bite wound, I repeat this process, and each time, the sore does not form. I haven't had a canker sore in nearly 3 years. I went from one every other month to none. My opportunity is clear. I could market my special canker formula to the masses. I have control, decent entry barriers, scale, and time. How many people suffer from canker sores? How many canker prevention formulas are out there? A few, but are they being marketed well? Can I execute better? The opportunities of open roads come in easily painted language, discomfort, distress, inconvenience, complaints, problems, and performance gaps. You must attack these challenges and introduce solutions. Offer solutions to the masses, and I guarantee money will follow. Moral, solve other people's problems, and you will solve your own money problems. Failure cracks roads open. Unfortunately, the least traveled fast lane roads are paved in failure, not smooth asphalt. This means stalls are guaranteed. Everyone fails on the road to success. What separates the winners from the losers is what happens when failure arises. How are you going to react? Will your road trip end with the verdict being, ah, this fast lane shit don't work? Or will you switch roads or keep going? Failures that drive you into new directions are often the most productive forces for invention. The heart pacemaker, microwave ovens, penicillin, and vulcanized rubber are all inventions that are profound results of failures and accidents. Failure cracked the road open, and in that failure, the inventors had the fortitude to recognize it. Yes, quitting your road and changing directions is sometimes the best choice, but be mindful of the distinction between quitting and quitting your road. Quitting is leaving your dreams for dead and putting them into the bin of impossibility. Quitting your road is changing course and turning down a new road. If you end your career as a teacher to start a private tutor company, you've switched roads. If you sell your tanning salon and start an internet business, you have turned off one road onto another. If you quit that network marketing company and decide to start your own, you have switched roads. I made many road changes, but I didn't give up on the dream. If your road doesn't converge with your dreams, it might be time to quit your road. Chapter Summary, Fast Lane Distinctions. Opportunities are rarely about inventing breakthroughs, but about performance gaps, small inconveniences, and pain points. Competition should not impede your road. Competition is everywhere, and your objective should be to do it better. Fast lane success resides in execution, not in the idea. The world's most successful entrepreneurs didn't have a blockbuster idea, they just took existing concepts and made them better, or exposed them to more people. Opportunities exposed in your language and your thought processes, as well as other people's language. Failure cracks open new roads. Quitting only happens when you give up on your dream. Chapter 37. Give Your Road a Destination. The tragedy of life doesn't lie in not reaching your goal. The tragedy lies in having no goal to reach. Benjamin Mays. What is your end? The fast lane doesn't care about your ends, it just wants to be the means. Expensive Italian cars and luxury estates might not be important for you. I get it. Maybe you're altruistic and want to live life modestly, spread the gospel, or contribute to charity and philanthropy. The end of the fast lane road trip is to crown your happiness with freedom. Freedom from financial encumbrances. Freedom to travel. Freedom from bosses, alarm clocks, two-hour commutes. Freedom from bad ratios, 9 to 5, 5 for 2, 2 weeks every 52 weeks, and 8% over 40 years. And of course, freedom to enjoy the world as your playground. The price of freedom, money. Freedom has a price, and that price is money. Big dreams from materialistic Ferraris to altruistic non-profit foundations cost money. You can't travel the world by swimming in the oceans. You have to pay your way, and if you think money is evil, you've already lost. On the Fastlane forum, a user posted this exchange that demonstrates how people want the fruit of the freedom tree, but lack the resolve to plant it.
I sat around a campfire talking to some people. The subject of money came up. One of the guys told me how life is not all about money, and that money isn't even real, just a socially accepted mirage, and that he wants to be poor and not some corporate asshole. This guy tells me that he's left his life behind in order to find himself, so he's interning for free at this place in exchange for room and board. Things have been hard since he had to leave his 4-year-old son behind, but he needed to find himself. After all, life isn't all about money, and all he wants is a little house and a horse, like what the neighbors have down the hill. Everyone around the campfire is nodding and commending this guy for being so enlightened. First, I agree. Life is not all about money, it's about time. So why are you throwing away 40 hours a week in pursuit of housing, which isn't even money? Second, money doesn't change people, it just makes them more of what they already are. Third, that little house and horse down the hill are worth about $1.5 million. And most importantly, you abandon your son to find yourself, and you aren't making a dime in the process? Who is subsidizing your journey of enlightenment and the emotional and financial responsibility of your son you left behind? I've run into a series of people lately who hate money and everything having to do with money, but they still want the end result. free time, and the ability to live their dream. I won't even get into how this conversation went when he introduced his politics. Suffice to say that we, not him, should pay for this guy to have a little house and a horse, and someone else to raise his son.
No matter how big or small, dreams have a price, and that price is money, responsibility, accountability, and commitment. Yes, it will cost you money, but exactly how much? Set your destination, 4 steps to starting. Your destination is the lifestyle you desire while having the freedom to enjoy it. There are 2 strategies to hit your destination. The first is the money system, in which you amass a lump sum large enough to earn monthly interest that will support your lifestyle needs. The second is a business system that spawns passive cash flow that supports your lifestyle and simultaneously funds your money system. To make this happen, you need targets. Specifically, how much money will you and your family need? What is the price for the freedom and the lifestyle you want? Find out with this 4-step process. Number 1, define the lifestyle and what you want. Number 2, assess the cost. How much are your dreams going to cost? Number 3, set the targets. Set the money system and the business income targets. Number 4, make it real. Fund it and open it. Step 1, define the lifestyle. Define the lifestyle you want and its associated costs. Do you want the big house or the nonprofit foundation? What exactly do you want? Write everything down. For the purpose of this exercise, I will play along. The lifestyle list. 3 cars, a Mercedes, a hybrid, and a minivan. A 6,000 square foot house with a fountain, pool, and waterfall. A small cabin in the mountains. The ability to travel 3 months a year. Private school for my children. Step 2. Assess the cost. Determine the monthly cost for each, including all associated taxes and insurance. 3 cars, $2,000. House, $5,000. Cabin, $1,000. Travel, $1,000. Private school, $1,000. Total lifestyle cost equals $10,000 per month. Next, determine your monthly allowance and other unknowns. This is for stuff like clothes, gadgets, toys for the kids, health insurance, etc. Add this to your lifestyle cost to arrive at your gross living cost. Gross living cost equals $10,000 a month, which is lifestyle cost, plus $4,000 a month for the allowances. Your gross living cost would equal $14,000 per month. Next, determine your net living cost by dividing gross living cost by 0.6, or 60%. This will account for potential taxes. Net living cost equals $14,000 divided by 0.6, or 60%, equals $23,333 per month. Step number 3, set the targets. The goal of this step is to set your 2 targets, the business system income target and the money system target. To calculate your money system target, multiply your net living cost by 12, then divide by 5%, or 0.05. 5% is the minimum expected yield on a money system. Money system target equals $23,333 times 12 divided by 5% equals roughly $5.6 million. For your business system target, multiply your gross living cost by 5. Business system target equals $14,000 a month times 5 equals $70,000 a month. These are your 2 targets, $70,000 a month and or $5.6 million. First, seek to create a business system that generates $70,000 a month in passive monthly income. Of course, in this income, 40% of it goes to taxes, 40% goes to fund your money system, and 20% pays your lifestyle. This delivers your target lifestyle and simultaneously funds your money system. The other target is your passive income from a lump sum money system. To enjoy your designated lifestyle supported by a money system, your target number is $5.6 million. 5% interest on this amount is roughly $23,000 monthly, which covers lifestyle and taxes. This dual flank attack builds a passive income stream from a business that funds a money system. The result is like warping the destination to you. You can experience retirement without being retired. For example, my web business routinely earned $100,000 per month, month after month. Yet in those instances, I didn't have $20 million laying around. But the lifestyle was an option because my business system cash flowed the equivalent of that lump sum. Excess income funded my money system. Then later, I liquidated the asset to arrive at my money system number. If your business system generates passive income, you can use it to fund your lifestyle and your money system simultaneously. Step 4. Make it real. Get started today by looking 3 feet in front of you, not 3 miles. A long gaze at the mountain crest is going to overwhelm you, so stop looking at it. The key to achieving enormous tasks is to break them down into their smallest parts. You can't run a 26-mile marathon by focusing on the 26th mile. You attack the first, then the second, the third, and so forth. I see this repeated a lot at the Fastlane Forum. I'd like to make $5,000 a month. How do I do this? Aside from the flawed money-chasing logic, the first step is to make $50 a month. You can't make $5,000 per month until you learn how to make $50 a month. It's amazing how people love to skip the process and want events. To start your money system, find a quarter and drop it into a coffee can. Congratulations, you are 25 steps closer to your goal. No, I'm not kidding. Your goal isn't $5.6 million, but 560 million pennies. Drop your loose change into your can at the end of each day. Find 60 cents there, 25 cents there, 115 cents there. It all adds up, and albeit small, you move closer to your goal daily. Now, is this ridiculous? Not exactly. I mean, this is exactly how I got started. And yes, I still practice this today because this exercise has 3 conditioning purposes. First, when you drop change into your bucket daily, you train yourself to visualize your goal moving closer. You get a daily reminder. Certainly, you won't accumulate 560 million pennies in this fashion, but the objective is repetitive progress toward a seemingly distant goal. Second, it forces you to evaluate. Have you applied pressure to that goal? Or is your change bucket the only weapon in your arsenal? Are you pursuing a fast lane business or still confined to a job? The third purpose is to change your relationship with money. If you're serious about a money system, you're going to need a big shift in your beliefs about money. What is money to you? A medium to get the latest World of Warcraft release? Or the soldiers for your army of freedom fighters? The final step is to fund your money system at a brokerage firm. Designate an account that represents your money system. Typically, most brokerage accounts require a minimum $1,000 deposit. If you already have an account, pick an income fund that yields at least 5% yearly and move the money there. Or alternatively, you can open a trading account and leverage cheaper and frequently traded ETFs or exchange-traded funds instead of a traditional mutual fund. Here are the brokerage houses I recommend to fund your actual account. Number 1, Fidelity, fidelity.com. Number 2, Vanguard, vanguard.com. Number 3, T. Rowe Price, troweprice.com. Number 4, TD Ameritrade, tdameritrade.com. If you don't have $1,000 to fund the account, you can do it once while you hit the $1,000 milestone. Your change bucket should yield about $500 per year. With an actual account, you can witness the real-time passivity of your money system. If you have $50,000 in your passive money system, which isn't leveraged in a fast lane pursuit, you can literally see your passive income stream every month in the form of interest or dividends. For example, if you had $50,000 and invested it in a world bond fund that yielded 6.5%, you'd generate $270 per month in passive income each and every month. Now, I reiterate, Fastlane wealth is created by net income and asset value, not by the stock market or compound interest. Your Fastlane business should fund this account, not savings from your paycheck. The Rules of the Road, Financial Literacy. After my sister turned 21, she bought her first car, a Nissan Pulsar. It was her first mistake in the world of finance and my first exposure to the world of financial illiteracy. My sister had trouble making the car payments, and when I asked to read her loan documents, I was floored. I investigated. I asked, "How did you buy this car? How did you negotiate?" She replied, "I told the dealer I wanted a payment for $399 per month." Her tragic mistake wasn't negotiating weakness, but financial illiteracy. The dealer gave her exactly what she requested, and by doing so, she got ripped off. She bought a car for thousands above sticker and borrowed at near illegal rates. The dealer gave my sister exactly what she wanted, a car payment at $399 per month, and all they did was fill in the blanks. Her loan was for 60 months, when it should have been at 48, and an interest rate of 18.8% when it should have been 9%. Ultimately, she'd paid twice the cost of the car because of one error, the error of being financially illiterate. Managing a money system demands financial literacy. You can't build a financial empire if you're ignorant of basic finance and economics. These disciplines are the building blocks to a financial empire, and without them, the sidewalk becomes a danger. Remember, more money doesn't solve money problems. If not educating yourself after graduation is one step on the sidewalk, the other is not educating yourself on basic finance and economics. The world is full of financial illiterates. They've failed driver's education and don't know the rules of the road. As kids, we aren't taught money management or basic financial discipline. We're abandoned in a financial jungle, swarming with predators. Many perfectly intelligent people lack rudimentary knowledge of basic financial concepts. Financial concepts such as interest rates, taxable and non-taxable yields, amortization of mortgages, the balancing of a checkbook, basic percentage calculations, calculating return on investment, why stocks rise and fall, why a guaranteed 15% return on a bank CD is screaming scam, how stock options work, such as calls and puts, why insurance exists, how a mutual fund works, what bonds are and how they rise and fall, global currency. To successfully leverage a money system for passivity, you have to familiarize yourself with the financial instruments that fuel the money system. Do you know how to calculate simple interest, a return on an investment? Do you know what happens to the price of a bond when interest rates go up? Can you figure out the difference between a tax-free yield and a taxable yield? These concepts harden your road to wealth. Financial illiterates can't manage money systems. To succeed on your road trip, you have to know the rules of the road and pass driver's education, basic finance, and economics. Live below your means. Slow lane? The first rule of financial literacy, live below your means. Yes, a pragmatic doctrine echoed from slow lane dogmaticians that is an affable replacement for its mathematical equivalent of keep expenses under your income. Earn 10 bucks and don't spend 20. But is it fast lane relevant? Absolutely, with one distinction. Live below your means with the intent to expand your means. Live below your means is relevant at any income level. The key variable is the word means. If Bill earns $50,000 and Jack earns $1 million, who has the greater means? Who will live the extravagant lifestyle? Both might be living within their means, but Jack has a drastically different lifestyle. Remember, slow laners seek to minimize expenses, while fast laners seek to maximize income and asset values. You can live richly and still live below your means. But for fast laners, it's a bigger challenge because we get paid first, not last. Tax bills come long after the income is earned, and live below your means requires above-average discipline. A financial advisor doesn't fix illiteracy. I am my own financial advisor because I don't like losing control. Hiring a financial advisor might make sense to you aside from one caveat. Hiring a financial advisor doesn't fix illiteracy. Yes, just because you had salad for lunch doesn't mean you can eat donuts for dinner. If you hire a financial advisor, you need competency to assess his advisement. Is your advisor advising a bond in a rising interest rate environment? Is your advisor advising treasuries when they are overbought? Is your advisor advising an investment that seems too good to be true? You see, literacy gives you the power to evaluate your advisor's advice. In October 2009, actor Nicolas Cage, who reportedly earned more than $40 million in 2008, sued his former business manager for $20 million, accusing him of poor advisement and leading him down a path toward financial ruin. Cage contended that his manager exposed him to a basket of risky investments, resulting in catastrophic losses. In a countersuit filed later, Cage's former business manager blamed lavish spending on Cage's financial difficulties, not his advice. Whatever the truth, if you can't audit your advisor, you don't have control. If you can't critique good advice from bad, you don't have control. For those who hire financial planners, literacy is simply insurance. Financial advisors do not solve financial illiteracy, just as more money doesn't solve poor money management. Financial illiteracy exposes you to risk, and in the worst-case scenario, fraud. Bernard Madoff's investment fund defrauded thousands, and billions were lost. But what's more shocking is that the whole whistle was blown years before. You see, when you are financially illiterate, you are deaf. And when you are deaf, you can't hear the whistle. Chapter Summary, Fast Lane Distinctions. The fast lane is the means to your end because dreams cost money. Conquer big goals by breaking them down to their smallest component. Daily saving reinforces your relationship with money. It is your passive system that buys freedom and another soldier added to your army. A money system isn't used to grow wealth, but to grow income. Growing wealth should be left to your fast lane road. You will struggle to build a financial empire if you are financially illiterate. Live below your means is relevant at any income level. For the fast laner, live below your means means to expand your means. A financial advisor doesn't solve financial illiteracy, and literacy is insurance. Financial illiteracy dilutes your control, especially when evaluating the advice of a financial advisor. Part 8. Your Speed. Accelerate Wealth. Chapter 38. The Speed of Success. Ideas are nothing but neurological flatulence. M.J. DeMarco. Wow, 220 miles per hour. I hear the 220 comment from youngsters who sneak a peek into my Lamborghini while it's parked in public. The listed top speed on its speedometer is 220 miles per hour. Yet, despite all that implied power, the car has never been driven to 220 miles per hour, or even 150 miles an hour. The 220 miles per hour is nothing but potential speed, and everything you've read in this book is just that, idle, unrealized potential. The fast lane is a conglomeration of information that creates potential speed. You understand the fast lane roadmap and its wealth equation. You've dumped the sidewalk and the slow lane. Your vehicle's primed and filled with fuel. You're committed, not merely interested. You're ready to engage in process, and you know exactly what you want and where you want to go. You've picked the road, and now it's time to hit the accelerator. Doing nothing is expected. Ever wonder if those late-night get-rich infomercial products really work? Can you really make millions trading foreign currency or buying real estate with no money down? The truth is, you can, but the purveyors of these infomercials don't tell you their real revenue model. They make money on planned obsolescence. Planned obsolescence is the marketer's expectation that whatever they're selling you, you won't use it. And if you don't use it, you're unlikely to ask for your money back. You see, doing nothing is expected. Human nature plays a powerful role in the business model of producers. get-rich system sold on TV take advantage of human nature because it's human nature to seek events and avoid process. The path of least resistance is not to do anything or to try half-heartedly. The fact is, most people, whether they agree with Fastlane's strategy or not, will do nothing with the information. They'll stare at the roadmap but never take the road and hit the accelerator. It's one thing to possess the treasure map. It's another to get out of the house and follow it. Doing nothing is normal when it's normalcy you seek to avoid. The strategy for speed, chess, not checkers. Speed is not thinking about a fast lane business, but creating it. Speed is uncovering a need and formulating a solution and a prototype. Speed is filing paperwork for your business entity. Speed is building and growing a business. Speed is making your contacts and forcing your process out into the world. Speed is approaching your business like a strategic game of chess while your opponents play checkers. Speed is turning off the PlayStation. Chess is a complex game with complex maneuvers, and your business must be run similarly. Unfortunately, most business owners approach business one-dimensionally, like a game of checkers, and doing so puts the owner into a winless game. Checkers is one-dimensional because all the pieces move identically, while chess is multidimensional. Each piece moves differently with different roles. The business owner who plays checkers has one offensive and defensive play in the playbook. Price. Raise prices, lower prices, cut costs, cheaper suppliers. Oh Lord, how could I be the cheapest so everyone buys from me? This one-dimensional attack throws entrepreneurs into cyclical bidding wars, marginalizing their offers with one goal in mind, to be the cheapest. In the limo industry, price wars dominated because owners commoditized their brands to a one-dimensional attack. If my offer is the cheapest, I will book more business. Your success requires a shift from this one-dimensional approach to a multi-dimensional attack. Put the checkers away and play chess, where each chess piece represents a specific function within your business. How you play each function will determine if you build fast lane speed or drift aimlessly. Those pieces are the king, your execution, the queen, your marketing, the bishop, your customer service, the knight, your product, the rook, your people, the pawn, your ideas. While it isn't within the scope of this book to dissect every nuance of each, I will highlight the crucial momentum-building elements that explode speed. You've got a system to build. Execution is king. Ideas are pawns. Potential speed is a loose idea that needs an executioner. When a youngster sees 220 miles an hour on a speedometer, they see an idea and a possibility. In business, ideas are pawns. They're 220 mile per hour speedometers on idle, parked Lamborghinis. Actual speed is execution, pressure applied to the accelerator, and it's the king of the entire game. Potential speed, an idea. Actual speed, an idea accelerated and executed. An idea trapped in your brain is like a supercar trapped in the garage with a dead battery. It accomplishes nothing, and its purpose is untapped. Execution is taking that Lamborghini out of the garage and slamming the accelerator to the floor, with the wind giving you a temporary facelift. Execution is getting that idea out of your mind and onto the roads of possibility. Entrepreneurs struggle to differentiate between idea and execution. They think ideas are worth millions, when success is never about the idea, but about the execution.
I had that idea.
Oh yeah? Who cares? So did 1,000 other people. What separates you from them? They executed. You didn't, and you did nothing. Instead, you spent hours playing fantasy football. You spent the morning sleeping. You spent 5 days at that job. You chose everything but that great idea. You see, ideas are nothing but a chemical reaction in your brain. It's an event that requires little effort. An idea actually is the event, while the execution is the process. Pierre Omidyar didn't start eBay in a flash of brilliance. No, he took that flash, the event, and transformed it into massive execution, the process. Execution is the great divider separating winners and losers from their ideas. If you want to retire 30 years early, you need a dominant, relentless king. Aloof and blasé kings lose games and don't win races. Ideas are worthless. Execution is priceless. Spend 10 minutes at my forum and you will discover that most entrepreneurs love ideas, but rarely discuss execution. In other words, they dabble with the pawns of the game. I have this great idea. Is anybody doing this? I can't disclose this idea because it will get stolen. Will you sign my non-disclosure agreement before I tell you my idea? No, I won't sign your NDA, nor do I care about your idea. In the world of wealth, ideas are worthless, yet treated like gold. I love how idea conjurers protect their ideas with great stewardship, careful to ensure they don't get into the hands of would-be thieves, not knowing that their ideas are already shared by hundreds of others. The owner of an idea is not he who imagines it, but he who executes it. According to entrepreneur Derek Sievers, ideas are just multipliers, while execution represents real money. Within our fast lane chess game, ideas, pawns, are the potential speed, while execution, the king, is the pressure applied to the accelerator. This relationship demonstrates how the coupling of a great idea, potential speed, and strong pawns, is worthless when attached to weak execution, no accelerator pressure, and a weak king. The pawn, or the idea, potential top speed, or the multiplier. Awful idea, 1 MPH. Weak idea, 5 MPH. So-so idea, 35 MPH. Good idea, 65 MPH. Great idea, 100 MPH. Brilliant idea, 200 MPH. The king, execution or accelerator pressure, actual money. No execution equals $1. Weak execution equals $1,000. So-so execution equals $10,000. Good execution equals $100,000. Great execution equals $1 million. Brilliant execution equals $10 million. If you notice, a brilliant idea and no execution are all worth about $200. Awesome potential speed, an idea, is married to weak accelerator pressure, execution. Yet, a so-so idea with brilliant execution could be worth $350 million. You see, it isn't about your ideas and their potential speed, but about your execution. When I started my web business, several other companies already had established websites. Instead of reasoning, somebody is already doing it, I executed better and became the leader in my industry. Was the idea spectacular? No, it was an okay idea, but I executed better than the competition. After my revenue model became successful and copied unmercifully, did my business decline and fail? No, because the idea wasn't the linchpin to success. It was the execution. Competitors who copied my idea didn't possess a powerful king to the wealth game, and that is execution. Chess is not won by stealing pawns. How did Facebook become the most popular social network when they weren't the owner of the original idea? Execution. Execution is taking that neurological flatulence that is an idea and making it smell like a rose. Seriously, think about what I've been saying throughout this whole book. Why is execution so difficult while ideas are so routine? Once again, we return to our wealth dichotomy, event versus process. Execution takes process, effort, sacrifice, discipline, and persistence. Ideas are just events. If you need to travel 6 million miles and you move at 15 miles an hour, you will get there in 45 years. This represents the slow lane. Yet if you move at 95 miles an hour, you get there in 7 years. This is the fast lane. The business of speed is execution. The speed of the fast lane is growing a business exponentially and taking advantage of exploding net income and asset value. Chapter summary, fast lane distinctions. Speed is the transformation of ideas to execution. Most people let powerful information expire and become worthless. Successful fast lane businesses are run multidimensionally, like a game of chess. One-dimensional businesses focus only on price. Execution divides winners and losers from their ideas. In business, execution is process. Ideas are events. Ideas are potential speed. Execution is actual speed. Others share your blockbuster idea. He who thinks the idea owns nothing. He who executes the idea owns everything. Real money and momentum is created when an idea, potential speed, is matched with execution, accelerator pressure. An idea is neurological flatulence. Execution makes it smell like a rose. Chapter 39, Burn the Business Plan, Ignite Execution. Having the world's best idea will do you no good unless you act on it. People who want milk shouldn't sit on a stool in the middle of a field in hopes that a cow will back up to them. Curtis Grant. The world reacts how it reacts. The world reacts how it reacts. If you think 1 + 1 = 2 and the world tells you it's 3, you have to let it be despite what your preconception tells you. When it comes to your ideas, your plans, and your business, you never know what works until you put it out to the world. In business, I call this putting it out into the box. Anytime I launched a new service or feature at my website, it was an experiment to see how the world reacted. And with each experiment, I'd be surprised. This new site design is going to be a blockbuster. And then wham, hundreds of emails pour in from disgruntled visitors who want to string you up on an oak tree and castrate you. The ultimate judge and jury of ideas is the world and the marketplaces that serve them. If the world likes your offer, they vote by giving you their time, their thoughts, or their money. If they don't like your offer, they withhold their money and look elsewhere. And the really pissed off ones, they email you or write a blog post labeling you as an idiot. The tribe has spoken. My website needed a redesign, and I spent 6 weeks creating a new look. I was excited, and the world was going to love this design. It was clean, user-friendly, and showcased my design prowess. I then launched it, and the world hated it. Complaints poured in. My site's bounce rate, people who would visit one page and leave, skyrocketed. My conversion rate plummeted to virtually nothing. I went from 1,200 leads a day to barely 500. The tribe had spoken. Despite my investment in that redesign, I immediately reverted back to the old version and trashed 6 weeks of work. My golden child was a golden failure. The world heralded a sign. I read it, and then I reacted. You see, the world tells you which direction you should be going at all times. Heed the signs. How do you get the world to tell you? Put your executed ideas and concepts out into the world and let it tell you. Paint the world with your brush of genius so they can tell you exactly how right or how wrong you are. Put your executed ideas out into the box. Dead college professors roll over. The world doesn't care about ideas, it only reacts to them. This simple fact pokes a hole in one of the sturdiest institutions of business practice, business plans. Academia will be outraged at the atrocity. Be prepared for the ultimate business sacrilege. Business plans are useless. Yes, I said it. Business plans are useless because they're ideas jacked up on steroids. Unless you count a barbecue-stained Hooters napkin, I never had a business plan. In fact, the best business plans are ad hoc scribbles on napkins, old McDonald's bags or Baby Ruth wrappers, and voice memos on your iPhone. The problem with business plans is that they are another manifestation of potential speed. Like supercharged garage queens, they aren't any more powerful than the lawnmowers that sit next to them. Business plans are useless until they are married to execution. And guess what happens then? The moment you execute, the world will tell you just what I told you. Your business plan is useless. The market, or the world, will steer your business in unimaginable places that will violate everything about your business plan. If you interview any entrepreneur who has been in business longer than 5 years, they'll tell you that they started off with intention A and ended up at intention B. They start selling product X and ultimately end up selling product Y. The world tells you where you should be going. And no, the world doesn't give two pence about your 150-page PowerPoint business plan. Facebook started as a college crowd social network. It morphed from a niche site into a mass-market social network that serves every generation. I started my website as a directory, and it transformed into a lead generation portal. The world has the incorrigible power to corrupt business plans the moment the idea is transformed to reality. However, I should mention this does not exempt financial analysis. A blind jump into business without knowing the specific financial constraints that govern the business would be foolhardy. When I made the decision to create a limousine website over a limousine company, I did a financial analysis. However, I didn't get entangled in the intricacies and paralysis of planning, which is no substitute for execution. Figure out what needs figuring and just do it. The world will do its job and tell you the directions to travel.
But I want venture capital.
I know. I can hear the objections already. Without a business plan, how will you get venture capital or investors? Well, here's the news. You can't. Without a business plan, you won't get funding. But please, take heart. The issue isn't your business plan, nor will it ever be your business plan. The best business plan in the world will always be a track record of execution. If you're a seasoned executor, suddenly people will want to see your business plan because they know you have the fortitude to execute. If I received a business plan from an entrepreneur who sold his company for $20 million just 2 years earlier, you'd bet your sevens I'd read it. The value is not the plan, but the person giving it and his track record of execution. Today, I know a circle of people who would read my business plan if I gave them one. They know I have a track record of execution that validates the business plan. If you don't have a track record of execution, the business plan is a worthless piece of Kinko's-bound pulp. Get funded with execution, not with business plans. I started my company on a shoestring and $900. No investors, no funding, and no help. The fact is, had I wasted 150 hours on a 95-page business plan, no one would have read it because I was unseasoned. I had no money, no track record, no races entered, no finishes, and no races won. However, as I built and grew my business, something miraculous happened. As my ideas crystallized into tangible assets that could be consumed by the world, suddenly I became the approachable asset. Venture capitalists and angel investors called me. I didn't call them. Suddenly, people wanted to see my business plan. Why the sudden change of heart? Wasn't I just the same guy just years earlier? Sure, but instead of an idea on paper, I had a tangible concept that reflected execution. A common question on the Fastlane forum is, how can I get investors for my idea? Doesn't matter if the idea is an invention or a great new website. My answer is never what these people want to hear. If you want investors, get out and execute. Create a prototype. Create a brand. Create a track record that others can see or touch. Dive into process. When you have a physical manifestation of an idea, investors will open their wallets. Heck, be good enough and they will be fighting to give you money. You see, when you have nothing except 120 pages of charts, text, and graphs, that shows organizational skills, not execution. Angels to private equity never invest in business plans. They invest in people with track records of execution. That is your best business plan. So if you really want to get funding for your business, get out and make your idea tangible. Give investors something they can see, touch, and feel. Give investors a glimpse of your execution, because that is what creates speed on the fast lane. Chapter Summary, Fastlane Distinctions. The world gives clues to the direction you should be moving. Business plans are useless because they're ideas on steroids. As soon as the world interacts with your ideas, your business plan is invalidated. The marketplace will steer you into directions that were previously unplanned for. The best business plan in the world is a track record of execution. It legitimizes the business plan. If you have a track record of execution, suddenly people will want to see your business plan. If you want your business to get funded, take action and create something that reflects tangible execution. Investors are more likely to invest in something tangible and real, not ideas dissected ad nauseum on paper. Chapter 40. Pedestrians will make you rich. If you do build a great experience, customers tell each other about that. Word of mouth is very powerful. Jeff Bezos. The Bishop in Your Chess Match. When life is tough, we seek the counsel of priests,